The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Anyone could light a candle. Just like a flower in the wind. You are you.
Welcome to Our Sacred Journey with your host, Audrey Katagawa. Our program is designed to bring you inspiration, new perspectives, and experiences of love, compassion, and kindness in action. Our guests are global citizens who live and manifest their values, principles, and ideals. Come share in their activism and values that are making positive contributions to humanity. Now, here is Audrey Katagawa.
Good Monday afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Audrey Kitagawa, your host on Our Sacred Journey. We love to start our Monday work week with inspiring guests. And today, our special guest is Reverend Jackie Fritz Manaputi of Indonesia. From 1999 to 2003, violent clashes between the Muslims and Christians in Maluku, Indonesia, killed over approximately 10,000 people and displaced over 500,000 people. To nourish peace in the Maluku Islands, Reverend Jackie promoted an interdependent society by seeking to strengthen communal bonds and facilitate public initiatives and participation by co-founding the Maluku Interfaith Institution for Humanitarian Action, or LAIM. LAIM creates institutional capacity building programs, develops positive public discourse, and builds a network of pluralistic conflict prevention observers. Using a multi-level stakeholder approach, LAIM builds interfaith peace groups of women, journalists, religious leaders, and students. It has a live-in program where clergymen and women spend overnights in each other's homes in order to build trust and work together to solve social problems in the country. Reverend Jackie and his colleagues have developed a peace curriculum, an interfaith peace sermon program, and a trauma healing program. Additionally, LAIM seeks to build community development and the peace-building capacity of the local government. Reverend Jackie is one of 35 Christian delegates to sign the Malino II Peace Agreement in February 2002. When violence erupted again in 2011, Reverend Jackie formed groups of youth called Peace Provocateurs, whose social media and Texting for Peace campaigns were widely recognized for successfully limiting the scope of the conflicts and preventing them from spreading. Many of his models are being adapted for use in other parts of Indonesia. He is the recipient of the Tannenbaum Peacemakers in Action Award. He recently earned a master's degree in Christian-Muslim relations from Hartford Seminary. Reverend Jackie, welcome to Our Sacred Journey. Would you help us to create the sacred space by sharing a prayer with us?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. Let us pray. But I will pray. This is the private time for me when I pray. So I will pray for all of you and the people back in Indonesia using my local dialect language. Tatu manis yang ada di surga, kita minta terima kasih atas kesempatan yang engkau berikan untuk bisa berbicara, untuk bisa berkumpul bersama semua pekerja perdamaian. Kuatkan kami, kuatkan semua orang yang berjuang untuk damai di mana saja, termasuk mereka yang ada di Indonesia dan di Maluku. Dalam nama Tuhan Yesus, kita berdoa kepada Bapa di sorga. Amin.
Amen. Thank you for sharing with us your prayer in Indonesian dialect. Thank you. Now, if you could share with me about your parents and how they influence you in ways that shape your life and your life's work.
Yeah. That's a great question. Yeah. Bring my memory back to my childhood. I mean, I was growing in a very lovely family. My father is a teacher at the time, and my mom is a nurse. So we grown up, me and my three other siblings, in a very harmony family. My parents influence us so deep. I learned about justice from my mom, yeah. In our daily life, I learned about humble from my dad. He used to teach us, don't expect more than what you have to receive, to accept. So my spiritual life was growing within the family. My mom and dad used to hold family worship every night. Yeah, when we was kids, we prayed together. Yeah, learn how to find the verses from the Bible. Yeah, learn how to pray, and that's the life. That's the family environment that I grown up when I was a childhood. So it's that, yeah, I mean, they planted so beautiful and lovely memory, yeah, in my life. The memory that I carry along my journey till nowadays.
Well, thank you for sharing about your parents. You know, we can never underestimate the influence which our parents, who are our first teachers in life, and how they shape our lives. And may all parents take responsibility to teach their children proper values and to lay a solid spiritual foundation very seriously in the children's lives. And of course, may the children have very deep gratitude in their hearts, as you do, for parents who help to shape our lives in such wonderful ways. And we, of course, thank your mom for teaching you about justice, for your dad for teaching you about humility and acceptance, and for both of them to lay that spiritual foundation for you in daily worship. So thank you so much for sharing about your parents. Now, Indonesia is a country that captivates our imagination with its exotic allure, beauty of landscape, and abundance of diversity and wildlife. But it's also very challenging geographically because it is an archipelago and it has approximately 17,508 islands, 33 provinces, and over 238 million mm-hmm. people, and is the world's fourth largest, most populous country. So in its history with traders from China, India, Europe, and Dutch colonialism for 3.5 centuries, Indonesia has 300 distinct native ethnic groups and 742 different languages and dialects. Although not an Islamic state, Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim majority nation, with approximately 86.1% of Indonesians being Muslim, 9% of the population Christian, 3% Hindu, and 2% Buddhist or other religions. Now, Islam was first adopted by Indonesians in northern Sumatra in the 13th century through the influence of traders and became the country's dominant religion by the 16th century. So Indonesia's history is far more complex, of course, than I have briefly described here. But this creates quite a backdrop for the work that you were called to do as a citizen of that country. Now, you are a Christian minority, and you are from the Maluku Islands province. Now, between 1999 to 2002, when the Malino II Peace Accord was signed, the Maluku Islands were embroiled in ethno-political conflict along religious lines between the Muslims and the Christians. Now, can you share with us what you think precipitated this conflict?
Yeah, it was the time when Indonesia as a country was in the transition period from what we call the old era after the Suharto, later on we call the regime, all step out and replaced by the next president, but also our economic situation was really worse, not only in Indonesia, but I think the economic condition was also affected by the situation in Asia and Southeast Asia in general. So we were in a very shaking situation as a country.
Unstable
situation. Conflict happened not only in my province, but also in some other province. Ethnical conflict happened in Kalimantan. Another religious conflict happened in Central Sulawesi and in Maluku. Some social tension and conflict happened in Jakarta. So overall, Indonesia at the time was in a very unstable situation.
So I understand that there were belligerents from both the Christian and Muslim communities, as well as organized Islamist Laskar Jihad, and Indonesian government and military forces all participating somehow in this conflict. And, I want to ask you, what was it like to be a Christian minority during this conflict?
Many people at the time as a Christian also noticed themselves first as a victim. Those who being oppressed by the majority or by the system, unfair system of the Indonesian Republic. We tried to defend ourselves, our rights at the time. And gradually develop the perspective. We demand the government to guarantee our rights as a minority in the equal system of Indonesia.
Well, we're going to have to take a short break, but and when we come back, I want to ask you, what was one of the most difficult experiences that you had at the height of the conflict? So this is Audrey Kitagawa with Reverend Jackie Fritz Manaputi of Indonesia on our sacred journey. We're going to be right back for more fascinating conversation right after this break. Thank you.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
This is the Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
This is Audrey Kitagawa with Reverend Jackie Maniputi from Indonesia. And you are listening to Our Sacred Journey. Now, before we went on break, I was going to ask you to share, what was one of the most difficult experiences that you had at the height of this conflict?
All right. It was not easy, yeah, to work as a peace workers at the time. I mean, terror, intimidation, and even murder can be a part of your of the initial process of dialogue and peace, yeah. For instance, during the conflict in Maluku, there were small groups of combatants, in both opposing groups. They were in charge of kidnapping and murdering those who they suspected of being traitors to their own community. Yeah. Meeting the enemy, quote unquote, informally, is considered traitors. Yeah, I did that many times. So my house, for instance, was burned to the ground by the mobs when I was away on a peace campaign. Yeah. Other colleagues were tortured because of their involvement in the peace process. Under this condition, sometimes we try to, or it is wise for us to walk underground. So that's a atmosphere at the time, a difficult atmosphere that I have to dealing with at my group. Being suspected by the Muslim is okay for me, but by my own community, by the Christian, it's really hurt me. I'm a pastor back home. So in Asian society, as many people know, religious leader, hold a significant position in the community life. And I was suspected by my own community. I was threatened by my own community. I was blackmailed by my own community. My family was traitors. Mentally, it's really hurt me. I have to deal with that kind of situation and emotion in time. And also by the military and some police apparatus sometimes, yeah.
Well, you know, with the approach that you took, which was to meet with all parties and being labeled an enemy for that approach by the Muslims, by the Christians, by the Indonesian military, and even the police were considering you and labeling you as an enemy. So, and I know your life was threatened, and like you said, your house was burned down. How in the face of such acrimony and danger were you able to persist in trying to find peaceful resolution to the conflict?
The difficult aspect of my work is to convince people in the very difficult situation where you were surrounded by those who keep hatred and try to take revenge of for their family, to defend their family. So convincing people needs a huge energy. I have to walk underground, cross the border, try to find my Muslim fellow, convince them. I have to walk with the police. I have to walk with some military or army officer to get some inside information and to convince them that our peace process, that we are the group, those who fight to bring peace, to speed up the peace. We are the group that should not be suspected by the military. I have to work with the government, with the government body, but also with religious leaders. So from many spectrum, we approach and many level, multi-level and multi-stakeholders, like to bridge them all together, to convince everybody, to enlarge the network of trust. That's the strategy we try to develop, enlarge the network of trust among people between one another in the very difficult situation when trust is almost absent totally in the conflict situation. Even respect among each other is totally absent when you bring or speak out about peace, put yourself in danger. Because people didn't want to talk about peace at all. They were suffer because of conflict. So convincing people, provoking people, to bring out what they consider as a peace inside their heart. It takes time and takes some effort to do that.
And how did your Christian faith influence your ability to continue your work and withstand all that acrimony?
I was growing. My faith was growing. I was started to defend my faith. I faced a very difficult question when the youth group came over me and say, "Father, what do you think? Do you think we have a right to kill somebody?" I said, "Well, you put myself as a pastor in a very dilemmatic question. I have to answer you." But then I just said that, God bless us with life independently. So we have to defend our life, to protect our life. Even though to defend our life, we have to kill somebody else. Those who come over and try to kill us, to take our life without any reason. But then my perspective, my growing ups. And then when I work as a peace workers, as a peace provocateurs, I consider that Christian faith really helped me, equip me to have to build my strategy and my sense of calling. I believe that Christ, Jesus Christ, never asked me to be a Christian. He asked me to follow him, not to be a Christian. Being a Christian is my own decision. As a follower of Jesus, I was labeled as a Christian. So to be a Christian is to follow what Jesus has done during his lifetime. and what Jesus has done during his lifetime. He said that I come so you have life and have it in abundant way, in practical way. Yeah. Having life, defend and protecting life, is to do what I call the liberation, to liberate people, what Jesus mentioned in Luke chapter 4, verses 18 to 19, that when the Spirit of God is in me, and I will commit the work of liberation, to liberate those who suffer, because to liberate the poor people, those who are arrested, the liberation. So, protecting life, giving life, in the liberation way, the liberation perspective, is what the Christian faith taught me and equipped me to do my job as a peace activist, as a peace worker.
And of course, one of the great teachings of Jesus was that we shall love one another as I have loved you. Yeah. So if we can live the teachings of Jesus and the great masters, life would certainly be more peaceful, harmonious, exactly, and respectful.
Exactly, yeah.
So now you saw that there weren't any local reconciliation efforts to bring about the warring factions together. So you actually co-founded the Maluku Interfaith Institution for Humanitarian Action, or LAIM. And please tell us, what are the main goals of LAIM?
Yeah, the main goal of LAIM, or Maluku Interfaith Institution for Humanitarian Action, is just to strengthen the interreligious relation among people on the very basic ground, to link the different level of community in one network, to bridge the gap, to close the gap between the groups of community. It could be a religion, it could be an ethnicity, it could be a social class.
So, I'm going to have you share with us, when we come back from our break, the methodologies used by LAIM to help bring about peace and reconciliation. Because I think it'd be very important for people to know what methodologies you are applying practically in your work. So this is Audrey Kitagawa on our Sacred Journey, and we have our very special guest, Reverend Jackie Manaputi from Indonesia. We'll be right back.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Many of us make choices in our lives based on how others react. But what should really matter is making our life choices based on what we intuitively feel. By tuning in to The Mystic and the Mystery with Inspired Intuition hosts Beth Porojic and Christine McIver, you'll receive the tools and inspiration you need to do just that. Your fears do not have to drive you, and you are naturally intuitive, creative, and whole. By believing in yourself, you can live the life you've been longing for. Listen for The Mystic and the Mystery every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? How do I get there? If you're searching for the answers to these and other spiritual questions, you can look within, and you can tune into The Open Door. Our program will expand your awareness of the teachings of the Ascended Masters, offer you practical tools that promote self-mastery and personal freedom, and provide an unerring pathway for graduating from Earth Schoolroom. The Open Door, with host Tom Schumacher and Terry Kennedy, is broadcast live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. the Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey. This is Audrey Katagawa with Reverend Jackie Manaputi from Indonesia. Now, I wanted you to share with us the methodologies used by LAIM to help bring about peace and reconciliation.
Oh, yeah, thank you. The methodology, yeah. It's what we call the community-based interreligious dialogue and peace management, yeah. So it went through some step of methodology, yeah. First, we establish the core groups and organizing preliminary meetings of various community groups. Yeah, we did that through underground movement. So the process of establishing the core group for the community based interreligious dialogue and peace management took place under very difficult circumstances at the time. So we utilize what we call the friendship web. Yeah, we were friends one another even before the conflict. So we tried to find our friends and raise the common concern about the conflict, about the impact of the conflict. Yeah. So we held some series of meeting, yeah, secretly, and strengthen our team, yeah, our teamwork, the core groups. Many times, we flew away out of the conflict region, like in Jakarta or in Surabaya, another province, yeah, just to get rid of the consequences, yeah, of the risk, because it's not easy, you know, to talk about peace, to get together, yeah, inside the public place, public space, which is very tense at the time. So, we went out and then we returned home, and tried to spread the peace, issue, yeah, to provoke people, started from our own community, very small community, from friend, and enlarged the group. But it also there was not an easy way to cultivate our core groups, yeah, because the conflict had escalated severely, yeah, especially with our relatives murder or our belonging destroy, yeah. The conflict caused us too much, so it was difficult to keep a distance from the hatred and the vengeance we felt, yeah. Yeah, this one meeting, I mean, could not automatically reduce our own eagerness to defend our own groups. So the transition grows slowly. I mean, in Amalsep. So the original groups began to develop, yeah, some like the list of participation, participants by using, yeah, what I call the friendship web of each other group's member. So we enlarged it. And then we create many small groups, yeah, many small groups. Then we link them. We try to link them all together, using the strategy that I named a coconut leaf plated mat strategy, yeah, as an effort to enlarge the dialogue and peace network and affect the society. I mean, the strategy, this is the strategy to multiply and cultivate the core groups by establishing new groups according to similarities with other civic group identities. Yeah. So the character of this strategy is adopted from the Moluccan practice of plating the coconut leaf mats, where each group is woven in with other groups in order to achieve strength to pursue the peace process and dialogue within the community at large. So throughout the previous phase, we agreed that every group of participants should set up their own new core group secretly, yeah, according to their similarity identity. So after a couple months, we have like a groups of teacher, a group of women, a group of politicians, a group of journalists, and then we link them all together. Then the technique we use is participatory technique to build the interpenetrated groups and programs. Yeah, what I mean with participatory techniques is, for those who work for community development project must be familiar with the use of participatory technique. I was the social activist long before the conflict, and I was very familiar with that techniques. I mean, the main principle of this technique is proportional participation within the community or by community groups, including people from different backgrounds. So they work as a team to extract information, to collect information and extract the information, analyze it, make a plan and implement the program. So they do not rely on an individual expert. Yeah. Basically, this participatory technique helps people to express themselves freely. Yeah. And,
it so moves them. So is the application, that is ultimately garnered from the collection and extraction of the information by people who are connected to their communities.
Exactly.
Then, how does the application actually take place?
Each group started, to analyze, to conduct some analyze process by collecting the information. Yeah, they get together, in the hidden place, and sharing all the information. Yeah, clarify all the rumors, and find the common perspective on one or more issue, and they try to find the way out by building some small programs together. Yeah, so the whole process of strategy planning, embedded the whole participant, the whole community. So there is no representative groups or experts. Sometimes you invite experts just to clarify some issues or to guide us in much more meaningful direction about some issue, but the total participation of the people, so small group, many small group, and then we blend them together, we link them together.
Was it understood, though, that when these groups were being convened, that there was a common goal that was to be achieved? The goal was peace, because you can also bring people together and not have the goal of peace. It could be a goal of retaliation. So how were you able to instill the goal of peace in convening the groups?
When we started, we put aside all the issue about peace or conflict. We started by discussing some social impact of the conflict. For instance, we talk about the kids, our kids. So, or we talk about the difficult situation for women to meet each other or to exchange or to sell something. Yeah, in the small enterprise. So that's the strategy I call eating the hot porridge. We used to start that from the age, and then when we gain such an amount of trust among one another, and we walk, we move up to the next level of issue, like the some sensitive issue that we have to deal with, the hatred, forgiveness, and peace. So it started from our common problem. And mostly we use the issue which is related with the impact of the conflict.
So you were confident that this process in starting off with sharing a common problem would gear the group towards finding a solution as opposed to gearing the group towards ways of retaliation or exacerbating the conflict. So you were confident that this process would bring about positive solutions.
Yeah, it works. It works in some ways.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that very interesting methodology. And I love the metaphor of the coconut leaf mat, because, of course, the singular strands of coconut leaf seem very fragile. It bends in the wind. But when you weave it all together, it becomes a very strong mat indeed. Uh-huh. Okay, well, this is Audrey Kitagawa with Reverend Jackie Manaputi from Indonesia. We must take a short break, but we will be right back for more interesting conversation.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Are you feeling out of control? Are bad relationships, anger, depression, and lifestyle overwhelming you? You can choose to release the belief systems that have kept women stuck for years. Tune in to The Power of an Unstoppable Woman with Dr. Rose Backman as your host. Break free from the genetic beliefs that can cause sabotage. It's time to stand up for who you are and what you believe in, no matter what. Listen every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Kitagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to our sacred journey with our fascinating guest, Reverend Jackie Manaputi from Indonesia. Now, before our break, you were talking about the participatory model and the proportional participation of people from communities. Now, you also mentioned having these core groups formed, and I would like to have you explain a little bit more about the leaders of the core groups, how you selected them, and what were you looking for in terms of their leadership qualities that you felt confident in that would lead the group towards finding positive solutions as opposed to leading the group to engage in retaliatory action.
Yes, during the process, in recruiting the participants for our core groups, and when we enlarge the groups, it requires a certain qualification, certain qualification of the participant, including charisma, ability to influence others, sub-ethnic representation, gender representation, religious representation, and importantly, connection to the patronage system of patronage system of the Maluku society. The patronage system or relationship mean here depends on a system of personal ties and network, which is important in Maluku society. For instance, the traditional leader who has an important position in the hierarchy is followed by his or her own community. Similarly, charismatic religious leader, for instance, tend to be role models in the religious community. So their presence at community gatherings or dialogue will have a positive impact on the event, especially if they serve as a buffer for tension that might be a fork during the dialogue process. So we have to take very serious consideration when we list the participant in each dialogue. Even when we enlarge the number of participants, it should be connected one another with the previous participants here.
So basically, you spent a lot of time selecting well-respected, recognized, influential leaders who had qualities that would allow the process to be led in a way that would produce positive results.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's really important to know, and I appreciate your sharing that.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds as if networking, after all these core groups were created, that they were created ultimately to produce a network of links between the core group.
Yeah.
So share with us why this whole networking system was so important to the peace process.
Yeah, it's very important to strengthen the network in general, because sometimes you strengthen just the youth group, but politicians misled the process or raise another issue that also caused the conflict in other friends. Or religious leaders. You strengthen the politician and journalist, but religious leader, they have their own opinion, their own perspective, and they have their own tension, for instance. Yeah. So network is very important to link them all together. We went through many series of meetings. For instance, we we brought one issue, like corruption, and that issue was discussed through 7 different levels of society. Was discussed by the youth group, was discussed by the politician, was discussed by religious leader, was discussed by education, by the teacher. So they all bring their own perspective on that kind of our common issue. Then we, at the end, we invite them all together. Yeah, we invite them all together and they share. Yeah. It was a sharing between the groups, between youth and religious leader and government officer and politician. So we develop our common understanding and perspective of that kind of issue. And we decide how we have to deal with that problem and overcome that problem. And each group take their own responsibility based on their own capacity. So the network is very important because we live in the society and communalism system and character of society. So everybody, it's individual as well as a groups, they link one another in a network of community.
So would you say that, healing has started and begun to manifest itself in the conflict areas?
Yeah. When the trust grows, and healing will follow.
And if you had a main message that you would like to convey to our listeners, what would your message be?
Yeah. Just started from the small thing in your life. I mean, the daily encounter with people. Yeah. Sometimes it means nothing for you. Maybe just say hi, hello, and you pass by. But learning from our process, we need to enrich each encounter of people. It could be in the market, it could be in the road, it could be at school, through that enrichment, we can build much more trust and be a friend to one another. It will bring about peace. At least started from the very small space wherever you go.
Well, I think you share something very important because ultimately we have to live our spirituality in daily life in order to be able to reach for the bigger goal. And, I also had a very beautiful spiritual master who told me, if you can't do the little things, you can't do the big things.
Yeah.
And so we must always remember to take personal responsibility for our actions, whether in thought, in speech, or in conduct. And of course, when we live our lives with respect, we can ultimately build trust. And when we treat each other as friends and find each experience with each other as an enrichment to our lives and to the lives of others, we can move to the big goal of peace. So I wish to thank my very special guest, Reverend Jackie Manaputi of Indonesia, for sharing his very valuable experiences and peace and reconciliation methodologies with us. May God bless you and your good work and continue to guide you in all ways and in the ways of peace. Join us again next week on our sacred journey. This is Audrey Kitagawa and Reverend Jackie Manaputi, and we wish you a very good evening.
Thank you for being a part of Our Sacred Journey. Please join Audrey Kitagawa again next Monday at noon Hawaiian Standard Time, 3 p.m. in the West, 6 p.m. in the East, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. This week, think about the contributions of love and compassion that you'll make and how together we can create a better, harmonious, and more peaceful world.
Just like a flower in the wind. all you need.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.